Welcome to the Soul of Travel podcast. I'm Christine Weinbrenner-Eyrich, the founder of Lotus Sojourns, a book lover, yogi, mom of three girls, and your guide on this journey. We are here to discover why women who are seasoned travelers, industry professionals, and global community leaders fall in love with the people and places of this planet. Join me to explore how travel has inspired our guests to change the world. We seek to understand the driving force, unending curiosity, and wanderlust that can best be described as the soul of travel. Soul of Travel Podcast is a proud member of the Journey Woman family, where we work to create powerful forums for women to share their wisdom and inspire meaningful change in travel. In each soulful conversation, you'll hear compelling travel stories alongside tales of what it takes to bring our creative vision to life as we're living life with purpose, chasing dreams, and building businesses to make the world a better place. But the real treasure here is the story of the journey. As we reflect on who we were, who we are, and who we're becoming, we are travelers, thought leaders, and heart-centered change makers. And this is the soul of travel. In May of 2023, I came across an article in Outside Magazine titled "Injury Prevention: 10 Tips for Thru-Hikers from a Physical Therapist Living on the PCT." I was so curious about how a PT might find herself living alone on the PCT and supporting hikers. And after reading today's guest story, I knew I had to reach out and invite her to join the podcast to learn more. I am so glad I did, because I have loved our connection and enjoyed this conversation. Here's some backstory. In 2018, Dr. Morgan Brosnahan moved into her cargo van and completed her first long-distance hike on Vermont's Long Trail. Then, in 2019, she completed the 2,650-mile Pacific Crest Trail from Mexico to Canada. After seeing countless hikers dealing with similar injuries and some resulting in expensive town stays, quitting the trail, or losing their trail family, Morgan was determined to make a difference in injury rates of thru-hikers. On trail, Morgan was able to help some hikers that happened to cross paths at the right time. After treating a hiker in her first 500 miles, she later ran into her at 1,500 miles and learned her guidance was enough for her to keep going. Since the PCT, Morgan has remodeled her bold red van to not only be a home, but also a mobile rehab, offering accessibility to those in outdoor spaces, rural areas, or confined to home. Morgan brings quality care in a multitude of ways. In our conversation, we talk about three of the things that Morgan loves most: van life, hiking, and creating a business aligned with a life you want to lead. I loved hearing how much overlap there is in each of these spaces, including starting before you think you are ready, and learning along the way. We ended this conversation with so much more to share, but I know you'll love everything we do discuss. Join me now for my soulful conversation with Dr. Morgan Brosnahan. Welcome to Soul of Travel Podcast. I'm really excited for today's episode. We have Dr. Morgan Brosnahan joining us, and she is a physical therapist and also the owner of Blaze Physio. And we connected, I saw her on social media. I think I actually read an article in Outdoor Magazine or some outdoor travel magazine, and was reading about your story and thought, oh my goodness, this is such an interesting story. I've never heard anything like it. Did a little research and I was like, oh, I love everything that you're sharing. I am so interested and curious about your journey and reached out to you. And I'm so happy that you said that you would come here today and share your work with us. So welcome to the podcast, Morgan.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to be on a platform for women and all of this travel. This is lovely.
Yeah, thank you. I know you mentioned before that kind of being in the adventure space and the outdoor space, you often end up on podcasts that are hosted by men. And so it's not a common occurrence for you to get to chat with another woman, and it has a different dynamic. So I'm really happy to be that space for you as well.
Yeah, I'm very stoked about that.
Well, we have a few things that we're going to work through today. We're going to talk a little bit about van life. We're going to talk a little bit about hiking and also talk about business. And as we were preparing for this conversation, we realized that there's kind of a real common thread between all of those things, which is a little bit about balancing risk and reward, and also something I call perfection paralysis in my own life, where I kind of see that the perfect ending, and that stops me from starting because I don't know how to get there. But really what we need to do is learn along the way. And I know these are things that you've done in all three of these aspects that we're going to talk about. So I'm really excited to kind of dive in. But before we get started, I'd love to turn it over to you, Morgan, and just let you introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit more about Blaze Physio, and then we'll take off from there.
Awesome. Yeah, I graduated PT school in 2017. I went to almost all of my schooling in Pennsylvania, and I'm originally from Maryland. And pretty quickly after graduating, I saw the writing on the wall of, okay, I'm going to have to work a lot. I've got student loans. I've got to figure out a work-life balance that makes me continue to love PT and still get to adventure. Cause I think something that PTs really deeply understand is not waiting until you're 70 to live your life. Because we're treating a lot of people who are older, and we see, just what aging can do to the body. And so it's how to have all of that experience as you go, instead of putting it off. And so van life became very prevalent. And then, just through a series of saying yes to things and just sort of opportunities evolved to the point of now practicing PT out of a van, treating hikers.
Yeah, which I can't wait to talk more about that process a little bit more in depth as we get into your story. But I would love to hear with you how you got into hiking and a little bit about some of your early outdoors and hiking experience. When is this, I guess, something that caught your attention, something you knew that you'd love to do and then would eventually turn into a career? But how did you first fall in love with the outdoors and through hiking and the adventure space?
I think the first thing that really got me into hiking, I grew up very indoor sport oriented. I'm from a rural area. There's not there's hiking, but it's green tunnel-y hiking. So it's not the kind of stuff that deeply inspires you to want to be an avid hiker. It's just sort of oh, you're outside and that's lovely and fresh air. And then, but I played sports and I had a lot of ways to move my body to value that kind of exertion. And then my parents actually booked a guided trip in the Grand Canyon, and we went down to Havasu Falls. And I think I was 21 when we did that. And it was just super impactful to me because it was oh my God, there's this beautiful space that, we could only access in our case by walking. You can't take mules down and stuff like that. But, we accessed this by foot. I loved how challenging it felt and just learning the different layers of being self-sufficient. So, that being a guided trip, we didn't take we didn't have everything we needed on our backs. The guide service used a mule, the guide himself carried more than we did, and things like that. But it was a really great intro into that world. And so I really think guided trips are an excellent way to get into this kind of stuff to see if you like it. This is just such a for success. And then after that, I was I even went home and was maybe I'll be a guide. I'm pretty easy to catch a bug of kinds. And so I thought about that, and then, ended up going the PT school route, and while in school got my first dog, and a way of just sort of getting away from the books and blowing off steam and spending time with my dog, which is to do more hiking. And so then it just started to really evolve from there.
Yeah, and I love what you said too about the guided hiking being an easy way to get into this sport. We'll talk a little bit more about it later, about some of the intimidation that people might have around, the unknown or just how to even start hiking. But I think even in any kind of travel, if you're looking at traveling in a way that you haven't before, a guided or hosted trip is such a good way to kind of more comfortably experience, have someone showing you the way without having to forge your own path right away, which again might set you on that path to the like perfection paralysis or not starting something that you want to do because you're just not sure of the right steps. Yeah, so I think it's a good way to go.
Definitely. And I think a big barrier to outdoor activities in general, and it's something I talk about a lot to other people just in this world, is like the expense of things and not knowing like if it's even worth the expense. Like I always say that like every outdoor sport can cost like $2,000 of like an entry fee of all the gear you need. And so like a guided trip, unless you're doing like a really crazy guided trip with like hard to get permits and stuff like that. But like most more casual guided trips are not going to be $2,000. And so it's a great way to like have the gear like applied and just like see if you even like it before investing and then know what you would even want to be getting it before investing. So I think it's a really nice way to like lower that barrier.
Yeah, I know there's a few women's hiking organizations in Colorado where you can book a weekend hike with them or a short through hike, and they provide everything, the tents, everything, backpacks, sleeping bags, pads, and like you said, one, then you're not trying to figure out what you need and buy it. And then, I'm sure we could both say that you always buy the wrong thing first because you think it's right, and then you try to use it and you're like, oh, that was such a disastrous idea. So it even ends up costing more. So I love those types of programs to test it out as you go along.
Definitely. And there's a lot of like you could go down gear recommendations on YouTube for hours, and then that definitely does not make you feel like you're any closer to a
Yeah.
decision.
Yes, decision fatigue is also real. We're gonna have, I feel like we're gonna have a lot of jargon that's gonna come out. We'll have a dictionary at the end of the podcast for people to pull from. But when you mentioned van life, that was something that kind of caught your eye. Can you take us back to what really inspired you to set off in this kind of solo van life journey?
Yeah, so it was something so simple. Like I think I just saw like an REI ad where this person lived in a van with dogs and was in all of these beautiful places, and I was just like, that's it, that's the move. I'm 31 now. I was 20, how old was I when I graduated grad school? Like 25. And the housing market has just never looked good. And like period since I've been in the world. And so I'm looking at that, looking at student loans, looking at wanting to be able to go on adventures and do things. And a big part of it at that point was like, how can I go on adventures, still work and tap my dog? And so seeing somebody doing that was just like, oh, what about that? Like, what if I stop putting expenses out to that to such an extent of like $2,000 rent, and more so have ownership on something and have flexibility to just move? Because at that point too, I had moved so many times between like different housing during grad school, housing during college. I was like gearing up to move again to like decide if I wanted to stay in Pittsburgh or if I wanted to, move out west, which is where I was leaning. And so it was just like, oh man, I could stop moving and just like all my stuff is loaded, my house comes with me, and then I just show up and just feel at home everywhere I go. And so it was just like a very quick, like, that's yes, that's it. And then I'm fortunate to have the resources of having a dad that has a construction business. So for me, I just had to find the van, and then we figured the rest out, and I had help with building. But I mean, I have friends in van life that have, like my one friend Sarah, she did her whole van conversion by herself. Self-taught on YouTube, borrowed some tools, and like you can, it's definitely something that can be done. Thankfully, it wasn't something I had to do that way, because it's not something that totally tickles my interest to build the van. I like
Yeah.
being involved in it, but I didn't actually want to build it. And so it was nice to be able to like have that option and then go from there.
Yeah. So I just was thinking the thing that you said about your home being with you. I think a lot of times people might have this notion that people that are living a van life or a nomadic lifestyle are people that really love to be disconnected and kind of constantly like getting out of the routine. But I love that you just mentioned you bring your routine and your home and your comfort with you everywhere you go. I feel like those two things are pretty contrasting in terms of maybe what I would have expected as an answer, but I love so much that that is what you mentioned. Cause I know even when I start traveling a lot for work, I really start to crave that consistency and the creature comforts of home. And it's definitely not as easy for me to replicate that if I'm headed to Peru or, you know, somewhere far away. But I really love that idea of that you aren't attached to like a location, but you are still attached to that sense of home.
Yeah, definitely. And there are ways, like the longer you do van life and things like that, the more ways you like establish that home-based feeling of like, oh, I can't wait to get back to the van. And then you just sort of like sit down with that same relief that you feel when you get back from a trip. But it's all relative to sort of your perspective on what you've established means home for you. And for me, it's like, you know, some creature comforts, like I'm, you know, sheltered. I have heater now, which is like the bougiest addition I've put in the van. So I'm warm, which is amazing. I've got my dog. I'm like out of like public perception, you know, like just not being perceived is nice sometimes, like just tuck yourself away so you can be like turned off. And then, you know, having familiarity things. So like I have like some pottery that I've made that, you know, I decided was worth the weight and, you know, epoxied it down so it can never fall down, and like some little drawings for my nephews, and the convenience of like wardrobe and shoe changes everywhere you go is also like cannot be overstated. So if you like go on an adventure and you're like, ah, man, I just wish I had this thing. You do, you have it. Like you have everything. So you're so overly prepared for everything all the time.
Yeah. I love that too. Cause I think a lot of people think, cause you have pared down and are really living in a minimalistic way, like that maybe you don't have everything, but everything is selected with such intention that you do really have what you need, and you find you don't have all the things you don't need. And then, like you said, everything is at your fingertips. So you haven't gotten to base camp and you're like, oh, this thing would have been great.
Yep. And you also like generally know where everything is too, because like everything has to have a home. And like it brings me comfort to be able to think about my stuff and run through it almost mentally in my head of like everything I own, versus when I've had like periods with houses and things like that, I feel like my impact and like everything is just so sprawled and everywhere, and I'm like, oh god, like it brings me stress to just have stuff laying that I don't know where it is, I don't know what I have, it just feels cluttery. Mm-hmm. And so like the nature of the van makes you very aware, because if you're not using it and you're kicking it around, then you're like, okay, this needs to go, like and you keep it very essential in that sense.
Yeah, I love it. I feel like for me, the more like as my family has grown and stuff, like our house has grown and our stuff has grown, and I'm at a point right now in my life where I want rid of so many things. I like really desperately desire a smaller house and less possessions, and my kids want nothing to do with that at this point in their journey. But I know that at some point for me that would feel more aligned with just how I want my energy to be. And like you mentioned too, when you're tracking things and keeping things clean and organized and everything, I think people don't often realize how much that is absorbing your focus and your attention. And so the more that you simplify, it really does help you to feel better.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the best things about backpacking too, is like you learn, like on a through hike, everything I needed and had was on my back. And like, we would have times in town where, you know, something random would happen. We'd end up like dancing at like a concert or something, or like, cause you know, you do have moments of normal activity during a through hike, cause you're stopping and real places. And so, or like going to restaurants and stuff like that. But the mental load of, I don't even have to consider what I look like or what I'm going to wear because I literally have one outfit. And so it's going to have to be good enough. And I'm going to go because I'm not going to skip this activity. And that's such a beautiful, like, mental shift to happen. And then I think carries over like post through hike. And then like van life just is a nice, like, easy bridge because it's still very minimalist. So you're still kind of like, I'm not going to avoid this activity because it's that concept of like not doing something until it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to avoid this social activity or this outing because I feel like I don't have the right outfit, because it just, in hindsight, is so silly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think we've all been there, but when you say it like that, it does feel like, why would I have made that choice? That's crazy. Of course, also no one was paying attention to what I was wearing besides me. And that's probably a whole nother like rabbit hole we could go down, but I think it's such a powerful awareness. And I noticed that too, when I travel, and I just traveled for 4 months with a carry-on with my daughters. That's all we had. And mm-hmm. It was so freeing. Like you said, I had, you know, like 3 tank tops, and I'd be like, which tank top do I want to wear today? Which it was a luxury that I had 3. Right. And then I would find still at the end of that, I could have had 2, because I just, like, that was a choice I was still making. And I would find I wouldn't want to like wash something right away, so I'd wear it over and over anyway. So you find yourself learning how you could pare down more. I would love to talk to you a little bit more about some of the other maybe misconceptions about van life, maybe concerning safety or who it's for, or, you know, what the experience is really like. Can you talk to some of those ideas?
Yeah, for sure. So I think, and this I think speaks true to just like women's existence in this world, right? Like if a woman wants to go on a run, like we've got pepper spray and like you know, like a guarded ring and things like that, and then like our phones and tell someone where we're at, and then like men can generally like just leave the house. And so like there's always that type of thinking whenever considering any kind of activity. And so van life is not an exception to that in terms of how women view van life. And there's certainly like a lot of safety things you can get into, and like a lot of good informational posts of like, oh, here's like ways to basically give you like an armored vehicle. And that can in turn, like those resources and that mindset are great, but can also make it seem scarier than it is. So it can make you think that you desperately need all these things or you can't start. And I think that is the biggest misconception, because like general situational awareness is like good for anybody. But as far as van life goes, like it is much safer than, and especially if you are in the outdoor spaces. I've just never had any real issues. Like, and I've been doing this now since 2018, and, you know, I park at rest stops when I'm crossing the country, and, you know, the little extra things I do are just like, I'll park there and I just won't get out. And like, that just sort of makes me feel better rather than being just like, you know, out with honey and just like making it very apparent that I'm there all night. I just pull in and I sleep. I've never had someone try to break into my van, and like, you know, and I feel safe to continue to do that. And then like in these small towns, especially, or these outdoor towns, like there's a lot of people in vans, and like just people just don't generally bother you. And so it's just a matter of like, if you're going places you're allowed to be, and being just even lightly situationally aware, it is not hyper dangerous like the internet would lead you to believe.
yeah I think that's really valuable. And I think, you know, that crosses over, like you said, this is kind of a hat we all put on as women when we leave, no matter what we're doing, whether you're going to the office, whether you're going to an outdoor activity, whether you're traveling solo, you know, in any other form, it's something that we find that like we pick up this idea and carry it with us. And I do think that it is a world we live in that is something that we need to think about, but not letting it be the thing that gets in your way from letting you have this experience. So I really love that you shared what that's been like for you. You did talk about resources for someone who's really curious about this lifestyle. How would you suggest that they would get started and look for more information instead of, you know, letting that be a barrier?
I would say there's a lot of good information in blogs. But you also have to take some like internet things with a grain of salt, right? Because things are kind of glamorized on the internet or over dramatized. So if it feels like hyperbolic when you're watching it, then it probably is. Like, it's probably not the greatest resource to explore because, I mean, from my experience in van life, like the most dramatic things that happen are just like physical discomfort from like being too hot or too cold or like it raining and you're kind of stuck in your van. So like, that's like mostly as dramatic as it gets for the majority of van life people. Some people have great luck and some people have terrible luck. And, you know, those extremes will make it muddy the internet waters. But I think in terms of like getting started, just finding someone whose story kind of aligns with yours, who's willing to like put information out, in terms of like just van life gear and like the technicalities of it, the blog I use a lot is called Far Out Ride. They've been doing it for a while and like they just break down like a lot of the DIY things about like the technical aspect of van life, not so much the lifestyle. But I think if it's like something you're considering, important steps to take are not waiting until you've dumped hundreds of or tens of thousands of dollars into a van setup to like actually go be in the van some. So like if you have an empty van, something that I did in the beginning was I had my empty vans. At this point, I was out $9,000 because I had just bought a van with nothing in it. And I put a like futon, like one of those beanie bag futons that like lays out into a fluffy mattress thing. I put one of those in the back and then I went to New Hampshire and like went hiking in the Whites. And so it had no amenities. I spent no more money on it. I slept in it. I thought about what it felt like to find a place to park, to sleep in a vehicle, to explore that kind of space, that dynamic. And I was like, yes, I'm in. So that like took me to the next phase where I made like a bed platform and cabinets and then lived in it for a month like that. And then after that decided like, okay, it's worth investing in like a nice fridge and like a nice stove. And so I think doing it in layers is a really great way to make sure that you prioritize the right things. And that if at any point, like if you're stoked on that level of van life at any point, you're going to be really stoked with the final product for sure. Yeah. But if you're not stoked with the like build up phase, you could end up out quite a bit of money, get into it and then be like, I hate this. And now you're trying to hopefully rekindle your expenses and sell a built out van.
Yeah. I think that's such a good idea. And I think, people would think, oh yeah, that's, I need, again, we really get caught up in this like end point version, but like you said, just if you would go camping anyway, sleep in the van, then you'll know, okay, this is a sense of this. And maybe someone's discomfort they might find is driving a van. They're like, oh, I didn't realize I didn't even like that. And so even a place of starting might just be finding someone else that has a built out van and seeing if you can experience that with them. Or yeah, just get to know who you are in that space. Cause I think, and we're going to talk a little bit about this with hiking too, is these are areas that get romanticized. So we have this idea in our brain of who we're going to be in this experience. And we can't wait for this freedom or this challenge or this, whatever this notion is that we are connecting and resonating with. And then we forget about the actual experience of living that and what it's like. And so I think it's such a good idea to just maybe set that romanticized version aside and see what the real life feels like and then go from there. And then you can hook back up to your romanticized version if that's something that you're really attracted to.
Yeah, for sure. And like, if things are going well and you're into it, like it's just going to give you more like excitement and just energy towards making it everything that you want it to be. But I mean, a lot of van life is like sitting with discomfort. So like, I think when people have the hardest mental time with van life is when they go into it kind of looking for something that they might need to get more out of therapy than van life, like looking for a change and a reset. And then what it does at first is kind of strip you of a lot of like security. So it strips you of knowing where you're going to be parking every night, which can be a little bit of a stress. Some physical comforts, like we said, about just like climate control, and just like space to meander and stuff. So you have less stuff. So if you're like sitting with the thought of getting rid of all those things and it starts to make you really uncomfortable, then you might need to do a little bit of kind of mental work before going. It doesn't mean that like that's something that won't be appropriate for you at some point, but I think, and through hiking it's very much the same. Like sometimes using these adventures in lieu of things like therapy and like working through some of those discomforts, it just sits you into really deep discomfort, and then you're like overcome with a lot of stuff. So sometimes they need to happen simultaneously, and sometimes just like one before the other before. And sometimes that's not like a factor, period. But I found that whenever it like overtakes people and just like puts them in a worse place, it's because like that was probably the part that was missing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's such a good, I think, word of wisdom again in so many contexts, because a lot of times I think travel and, like you said, outdoor spaces and some of these lifestyle experiences, they are the allure at first is the disconnect. And the disconnect is maybe coming from, like you said, some other part of your life that you are trying to leave behind. But what really needs to happen is you need to confront it. And I do think that does happen sometimes through travel and through these, like this proximity to self, like when you're the only person that you're with, you're going to figure some things out pretty quickly.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, being aware of the choices that you're making and knowing that you're not going to actually outrun it. You are going to have to deal with it. It's not going to disappear just because you've created this new environment.
Right. Yeah. So I think if you feel like when you are put in the position to have to face those things, if you don't feel like you have the tools to then process and face them, that's whenever like you might need to get those tools first, because it will happen. Like, even if you don't think you have stuff, you sit around in a metal box for a while, or you walk in the woods for a while, like you have stuff.
Yeah. Hey, it's Christine. Interrupting this conversation for just a moment to tell you about an incredible resource for women and non-binary entrepreneurs starting their travel businesses or wanting to create a more solid and sustainable foundation for their business. I am delighted to introduce you to one of the Soul of Travel allies, Women's Work. Women's Work helps women and non-binary folks build thriving tourism businesses through education, mentorship, and community. I'd love to take you back to my first connection with Women's Work, back in December of 2021. I had a meeting with the founder, Iris Serbinescu. She was in the early stages of launching the Accelerator program, but I was actually meeting her to hear about a property in Nicaragua she was representing at the time. She hopped on Zoom, fresh off the beach, with still damp hair, and if I recall correctly, she was still wearing a swimsuit and cover-up. From her easygoing, full-of-life energy and passion for creating community and building connections between impact-driven companies, I knew right away she'd be someone I'd be staying connected with. In a follow-up email, she casually mentioned an idea she'd been incubating and was creating a pilot program for called Women's Work to support early-stage women and non-binary entrepreneurs. It was kicking off in just a few weeks, and she thought I wouldn't necessarily want to participate, but wondered if I had any referrals. However, with my women's adventure travel company, Lotus Sojourns, being launched just before the pandemic, I felt like I was still in startup mode, and I loved this idea. Without much convincing, I offered a full-hearted yes. Day one, I didn't really know what to expect. I just knew that I would follow this brilliant woman where she would lead, and I couldn't wait to be a part of the container she was creating. Then Iris shared the modules and content, the guest presenters and mentors, and I was floored. I couldn't believe the travel leaders she had involved to share about their journeys and the industry experts who would be walking us through all of the steps to successfully launch a travel business.
and the other women on the call who would join me on this journey were all so passionate and enthusiastic about the industry and what they were creating. It was perfect. I have been in the industry nearly 20 years at this point, and I also have a master's in tourism administration. And this was what I had been looking for. There is no other place that I have seen that offers this level of support for early stage entrepreneurs. Women's Work AIM is to flatten the learning curve when it comes to industry knowledge and entrepreneurship, helping you reach your goals faster and with more fun, which I can attest to, through 12 weeks of expert-led workshops, mentorship, and community. Even after all this, the fact that I was surrounded by women as I went through this journey only made it better for me. And now I have a beautiful community of women who are friends and still support me as I grow my business. So here we are, 2 years later, and Women's Work is about to launch its fifth cohort of this incredible tourism business accelerator. And I am still standing beside Iris and having full faith in her vision. If you are interested in this type of support to grow your business, you can still join the cohort that begins on February 26th. Just visit womenswork.com to apply today. That's womnswork.com. Be sure to let Iris know you heard about the accelerator here on Soul of Travel podcast. And are you an industry professional or business owner who would love to support Women's Work and their mission? You can get involved as a sponsor, subject matter expert, or mentor. You can reach out to me for an introduction or just email them directly at womenswork@byirisco.com. That's womnswork@byirisco.com. Iris and I would love to launch a special series here on the podcast dedicated to telling the stories of Women's Work alum. If your business would like to support us in amplifying the voices of women and supporting more women in achieving leadership roles in the industry, reach out to me at connect@lotussojourns.com. Thank you again to Iris and Women's Work for being an ally of the podcast. I deeply appreciate your partnership and support of my work. Thank you for taking the time to hear a bit about Women's Work. Now let's head back to our soulful conversation.
Well, let's talk about walking in the woods for a while. I know that you have hiked the PCT. You really fell in love with through hiking. Speaking of hikes that brought up stuff, I know you started the PCT as a trip with two couples, and it didn't end that way. But if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit of that journey, one of those early hikes, and we can talk a little bit more about the hiking in general and the community of through hiking.
Yeah, so we had talked about this a little bit in the pre-interview, because it's not, I mean, I've had a lot of hiking podcasts, but again, as like women's platform, I felt like this story is a little more impactful. But yeah, we started our through hike as two couples, and the like relationship dynamic was that like the two boys were friends. And so Kelly, the girl I ended up hiking the whole trail with, and I didn't really know each other at the start. We had met once at like St. Patty's Day party for like an hour, you know, so not much of a relationship there. And so we started and didn't have plans to necessarily like stick tightly together, but the way the mileage broke down, like we ended up doing the whole desert together and like had that group of four and started to look like, okay, that's going to be like probably the whole trip. And then this is, and maybe advice for anybody in a relationship going into a hike like this is, or it's actually kind of same line of thinking as like the van life thing. When there are things like deeper and then you put them in these like challenging circumstances where you strip away a lot of stuff, like you have to confront it. And so in our case, that was kind of what happened. Like things that had been easier to sort of smooth over just needed to be confronted. And so it ended up, you know, with just sort of dissolving both of those relationships. And the like comedic factor of this is just that the timing of it just happened that like all in the same week. My relationship, we decided like, you know, it's had its course. And so he went home, and then a week later, the other couple reached the same decision. After my breakup, I was like very adamant, like, I'm not leaving. Like, this is, I think initially it was a little assumed that, you know, me as like the female in this situation and it being my first thru hike, but not his, that like, okay, well, like clearly I'm gonna leave and let him keep this thing because this is what he does. And it's like, no, I mean, I've already hiked 800 miles. Like, I'm not leaving. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to stay. And ultimately what was better for him was to leave anyway. So he left. I decided to stay, and I thought, well, I'll hike with these other two or maybe I'll stay, like go by myself. Like, we'll see what the dynamic's like from here. And then they ended up splitting. And then she and I kind of looked at each other like, we going to do this? Like, like, what if we just hike the whole thing? Like, what if you and I just keep going? I mean, at that point we had gotten closer over the last 800 miles, because obviously these weren't breakups that happened overnight. They were like, we were having some troubles. And so her and I were getting closer as we were processing and going through these like tough times. And so that's what happened. So we were like, okay, I hope we like are friends enough that like this will be fine. If not, like, I guess we'll figure it out. And it turned out to be a absolutely lovely way to process and bond with another human. So like, we're both going through something very similar, and walking all day with no outside influence and like time and space to process those like relationships and like the fears and anxieties of like now continuing on this hike that didn't look how we thought it would look, was like very profound for both of us. And also I think we processed those breakups at kind of warp speed because of that. Like if we had like the societal setup to be able to sit with our emotions that long and that deeply in anything that goes wrong, we would all probably have less like grief and stress and triggers. And so it was like we just got really fortunate to have that space together. And so it didn't take all that long before we were like having a great time and like so thankful the way our hike turned out, and it changed a lot of our logistics and how we went about the hike. And it opened us up to new friends and experience, and we really felt the empowerment of just being two girls doing it. And like it took away that, oh, like as if these are our protectors in some way, or like, oh, good thing you've got the boys or you couldn't do a hike like this. And it was sort of like, ah, that's not the case. Women do this hike alone, women do this hike with friends, like women through hike in overwhelming numbers.
Yeah. I love that. It's so interesting because even like we were saying before, so many people, the breakup would happen and then the travel would be like the answer, you know, but you actually had the whole course of everything happen in one experience, unplanned. But then you kind of got to see how it can be a container for healing. And like you said, when you are so focused on processing anything, it's going to happen because you have nothing else to do. And I do think that's some of the allure of why people do look to these experiences for healing. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you said, being conscious of the choice that you're making and realizing that that's the process you're looking for. I do think it also sneaks up on some people. Like they don't know. They have. And again, I think this is that romanticized pull or that draw that these huge experiences have to people. They don't maybe know what the pull is, but when they get out there, they're like, oh, I see what this is about. And I think, you know, so many of my guests had been fans of Cheryl Strayed, and I don't know where she lands mm-hmm. in the through hiking community, but I do know that she's inspired so many women to tackle things in their lives that they wouldn't have without having seen, you know, her journey was like a permission for them to do these adventures and to be the woman on the trail by themselves to say, hey, I have seen it done before. I think you know, in anything, this is why this podcast, I think, is so important. When we see someone else like ourselves doing an experience, it gives us some permission to do the same thing. Like if we're looking out at that trail and it's all men who've gone before us, we're less likely to say yes. But when we start seeing women doing these same things in business and hiking, in any arena, then we feel like we can also kind of, we don't have to blaze that trail by ourselves, that it's kind of already been opened up for us. So I think I love that you kind of also had both of those experiences in your own PCT, with starting with, you know, having men as a part of the journey, and then realizing as it ended that you could be two women that completed this as well.
Yeah. I think that is just the concept of like representation matters. And like, when you do hard things, it just teaches you, you can do other hard things, but sometimes somebody else doing a hard thing that you relate to is the first step to you doing the first hard thing.
Yeah. I know we kind of laughed that I always, if I'm setting out on an adventure that seems just ridiculous, like I always go back to the image of Cheryl putting on the giant backpack and being like, I know I'm at least one step ahead of that, so I'm sure I can do this. Like I use it as this weird measuring stick for my own barometer of success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Cheryl Strayed is very well received in the thru hiker community. There was like a little spell where I think it was like it was cool to be like, and like so many people started thru hiking because of Cheryl Strayed. But then it was cool if you weren't like, oh, I'm never even seeing wild. And then like, it didn't take very long before everyone was like, knock it off. Like in the year of the Barbie movie, like we're not doing that. Like,
yeah. I'm glad to hear that, because I mean, I do think that it really did shift the way, well, one, it really put a spotlight on what thru hiking was. Like, I do think mm-hmm. it was something that was lesser known, and it brought a lot of visibility to through hiking. And I know that another thing that we talked about in our pre-conversation was really trying to measure the risk and the reward for one of these experiences, because, you know, one, you're taking time away from your daily life, you know, your 9-to-5 life or whatever you want to call it, because it takes a long time to complete one of these trails, even if you do it in sections, which some people do section hiking of the larger trails. And then if you're looking at, you know, being a woman on the trail, if you're looking at all the different risks that go into it, you know, if you are well-versed in through hiking or not, if you are assessing all those things, and then you're trying to balance that with what you take away and what you learn about yourself. How do you encourage people to kind of navigate that question? And I think we'll pull this into business as well, because I think it's similar. How do we kind of step away from that comfort zone and dive into this other experience? And what do you think people take away from it that really shows the value of the risk versus the reward?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, and this is kind of applicable to like the outdoor space, is like weighing that risk tolerance. And some of that risk tolerance comes with skill. So like mitigating risk is largely done by like what you are qualified to do. So like if you're coming in at a very beginner level, then you need to look more at like bites. So you build skills and confidence. And then your risk mitigation is much better. And then you also just feel like you can take on bigger things without going over your threshold. Because I think that like sweet spot of feeling anxious and excited, but feeling confident, is a really nice place to be on an adventure. But feeling like completely over your head and like overwhelmed might make you not like the same activity that if you had taken sort of more baby steps to get into, might be like something you're really passionate about. And as far as like through hiking specifically goes, there are so many ways to get involved in that community without biting off the whole through hike. And sometimes that's a good way to see, almost kind of like the same thing with the van. So like, you know, you kind of take little steps, and then if you're stoked on those steps as you go, then you're like more energized and more willing to put the effort into like the next phases. And so something that if you live anywhere near one of the long trails, like the Triple Crown trails, which is just the PCT, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Appalachian Trail, something like Trail Magic is a really fun way to get involved. And there's a lot of like people from the community that we would call trail angels. They get out and they do things like they'll set up a random table with food and drinks and snacks at a trailhead or somewhere where they can like get access to the trail. And then hikers are so stoked about that. And that immediately welcomes you into their community. So whoever comes through that day, you get to have that sort of unbridled companionship, which is what a lot of people gain from through hiking and really love about through hiking, is just that it's sort of like when you're stripped down from all that other stuff and you have one common goal with people, you just get to know them really fast and the relationships are really special. And so being a part of their experience by doing things like trail magic gets you an in a way that is more accessible for some people, so like much lower risk. And then like giving rides to people who are clearly through hiking, it's hitchhikers. That's a way to like get to know people in the community and, you know, have them in your car for a little bit. And then if you're not like close to a trail town in that way, just like being out on trails, you can still get some similar camaraderie or joining groups. So like, especially like women's hiking groups and things like that, that would just help you get some community, get some skills built, and just sort of take those small bites before going for the big thing. But I think if you get past that layer of stuff, then doing like get out for a week, like figure out the time maybe that like the bubble is passing through. And if you're going to like take out a section on one of the big trails, like do it whenever most of the through hikers are coming through. And like, I can't guarantee that they wouldn't just like blow past you depending on the point in the season, which might end up at like a camp with some of them, or like just feel inspired by like how fast they're moving and like being on the trail that you know they're hiking. Like those kind of things can go a long way in terms of like building enough inspiration that the relative risk seems lower and lower. Mm-hmm. So I think it's in general about just like the small bites.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that you mentioned the community, because I think, you know, maybe people have the initial draw to through hiking because of something that's happening in their life or this challenge that they want to, you know, achieve, this goal they've set. But maybe, I know you mentioned, and I've heard other people mention, that this community is something that brings you back over and over again. And I know that's also part of what led you to create your current business. So that's what I would love to talk about, is the catalyst for that. And I know for so many of the women that I've interviewed, they've kind of had to navigate this transition of leaving a stable income or a corporate path or 9-to-5, like the way we thought that we should be living our lives, to really creating something more aligned with who they are and to be able to serve a community and to serve a greater need. What did it really take for you to take this idea and trust that instinct or that, like, that need that you felt in yourself, and then be able to bring this to life to serve a community that you really grew to love?
Yeah, I think first was like the unfun stuff of like, okay, I need to get like my affairs in order. Like I need to save up a little bit of money to give myself some, a bit of a like room to fall without it being devastating. And then, you know, cross your T's, dot your I's in terms of like legally setting up a business. So like doing that kind of stuff while still working full time is what that looked like for me. And then just sort of like finding people that like gave me the space to be inspired and allowed me to like talk about it and either like match the energy of that or like stoke the flame. So like sometimes if you have friends or family that, you know, you can almost feel like you're in like a think tank with, where you're throwing out stuff and then they're like, oh, what about this? And you're like, oh my God, good idea. And then you just like, those kind of people are like so valuable in your life if you can find those. And then so for me in the beginning, I was working 3 jobs to work a little over full time. And that was in part because it was during COVID. And so what else was I going to do? So I had a little extra time to spare. and trying to really save up money. Every morning I would walk. My mom, thankfully, is my like think tank person. She owns a dance school. And so she's got a very creative mind and creative business. And so I would like call her in the morning, walking, honey. And like, I have this idea, like, what if I did it this way? And yeah, like just talk her ear off. And she would always like give me that space. And then I would go to work, which would serve as its own form of motivation of, this is great, but I don't want to do this the rest of my life. So like more motivation for the next morning to then be like back in the think tank of like, okay, what can I do? And so I think at a certain point, you kind of have to give yourself like some concrete goals of like, once I've saved X amount of money, then this, or like, so that way you don't forever have the, like the someday complex. And so it's like, for me, I hit that savings goal, and I had also set like a time limit of like, you know, when COVID lightens up, I'm going to go out to the next available hiking season and I'm going to just start. And so that ended up being 2022. So I like, you know, saw that coming and started like getting everything wrapped up and was like, okay, it's like almost time to like cut the safety nets. And then in this particular instance, it was just a matter of like, I had all the ideas, had a general concept of what I wanted. And then I just needed to start because I realized I was at a point where I didn't know what I didn't know. And there was no framework to follow. So I was like, at this point, I just need to like go out and try and see what happens. And so I like slapped a magnet on my van and showed up at the Southern Terminus campground and just started meeting people and just started telling people what I was doing. And then, you know, after a few people like took the option to use me to help them and then started telling other people that I helped them, it started to like really quickly snowball. And then before I knew it, I was seeing like a full day's worth of people every day for like a few months. And it very, in my case, very quickly replaced the like workload and income of my prior job, which was exciting, but also I knew my off season was going to be looming and like, how am I going to make money when the hikers aren't hiking? And so I had like a little bit of telehealth in that off season, but I ultimately had to like take a 10-week contract. And so that's something fortunate with healthcare is like the contract working option. And so I had like cut most of my safety, well, I cut all my safety nets all through the summer, pulled in one more quick safety net, and then went out in the next season. And now I've like, it's like 2024 will be the first year that I've like officially cut like the external sources of income safety nets. And so I think recognizing that people who are running businesses don't often cut all their safety nets all at once and permanently. Usually there's like, it's a slow trickle. So if it feels like you're wanting to start something and you're scared about cutting your safety net and it looks like other people do that, maybe seeing that that isn't always the case. Like sometimes there's just a bit of a like a doubling up for a spell, but if you don't eventually cut it when you've like hit sort of a tipping point, then your safety net might be holding you back.
I think there's so many good lessons in there. And I love the idea of what you're saying, what you might perceive about other people's experiences that you think, oh, yeah, they just went all in and you're afraid because you're not ready to go all in, but you're not seeing what's around them. You know, like you said, that they may have created these spaces to kind of build towards, and we're only seeing what they're showing us, which is also something, of course, we know through social media, it doesn't always give us a full picture of things, but that's why I love having these conversations so that we can see what that path actually looks like. And then also just this idea that, you know, to keep moving forward is really important. And to not let your safety net hold you back, which is, I think, what can really happen to some people. It's hard. It can be hard to make that last cut. And I think also the people around you, that's like the most common advice I give to people when they ask about how do you create businesses that succeed, is it's the people that you have around you, because you need that sounding board. You need the person that your mom is for you. I have those people in my life that I'm like, okay, I've hit the next hurdle. What do I do? Because we're doing this by ourselves usually, right? And we don't know everything. We can't know everything. We have to learn as we build. And so we need other people's expertise, and we need their kind of detached overview of something. You know, we're so deeply invested that sometimes we can't see our way out of certain situations, and they can have this higher view and just be like, oh, well, I think if you connected this to this, you'd really see the solution. And then you go, oh, may have seemed so obvious, but when you're in it, you just can't get that perspective. So I love that you shared that. And I just was thinking as we were talking and as you were talking, we haven't really clearly defined what it is you're doing right now, Morgan. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit more what Blaze Physio is and what you have brought to life.
Yeah, that's funny. Blaze Physio is basically a combination of all the things we've been talking about. So, you know, I already lived in a van. I was already working as a PT, and I had already free hiked. And so this was sort of my creative vision of a way to combine those things for a community that I really felt a strong pull to want to continue to be involved with, but also one that needed help. And in the midst of my through hike was sort of the seed planting that, like, these people need help, but also I might be the person to help them. And that just happened through a lot of experiences of seeing people injured and watching the processes they were going through. Because I mean, when I hiked, I was a baby PT. So I always think it's important for people to understand I wasn't out on trail, like, saving everybody's hikes and offering advice in all these group settings. I was actually mostly, like, kind of keeping to myself. I'm not generally super extroverted anyway. And B, I don't know any PT that doesn't have imposter syndrome to an extent. And so, like, baby new grad looking at these, like, gnarly overuse injuries, like, I had nothing to say to these people at first. But I did have one hiker that, you know, I just knew well enough, and what she had, I was, like, pretty sure about. And so I helped her. And whenever she, I ran into her, like, probably 1,000 miles later. And she had said that that really helped her. And that I think was where I was like, maybe I am qualified, and I, like, can also do more work in terms of, like, acquiring more education and, like, specializing into this population to be the best qualified person for it. So now I follow the trail in my van and move, like, town to town. So, like, with through hiking in general, it's basically like 5-day backpacking trips strung together for 5 to 6 months. And so when a hiker is injured, their priority is going to be to get to town one way or another. So they're either going to bail, or they're going to hike through to the next road crossing, and then they're going to go into town and then figure out what to do from there. So it's less about me showing up on a ridge line, although that has happened sometimes, just because I'll be, like, out hiking with my dog, like a day hike, and I'll run into somebody who's in turmoil. But generally, these hikers are getting themselves to town. And then my role is to provide them with somebody who knows what they're doing and understands the resources they have, whether I'm there physically or virtually chatting with them. So that way, the understood goal when I'm talking to them is that they want to continue this hike. And that was the part that was, like, deeply missing, other than just the orthopedic and endurance athlete knowledge that was missing in a lot of these towns with the providers that are mostly like PCPs, who their primary role in that kind of injury would be to assess the severity of it and then refer to the appropriate specialist. So other than those people, like, that information was kind of there, but then they didn't really quite know what to do to tell them to keep hiking. Mm-hmm. Which is their goal, because a lot of people, you know, we've talked about what it takes to, like, be off work 6 months and how that in itself is just, like, a huge conversation. So, like, once you've done it, you put all the stuff in order and you're there and you have tendonitis, absolutely terrible advice would be to just quit hiking. If it hurts when you hike, stop doing that. Like, that's so unbelievably unhelpful and arguably harmful for people who have put so much on the line to be hiking. So that's where like my role is to sort of mitigate those and try to keep as many people on trail as appropriate, with the occasional injury that is trail ending, and but having that conversation from the perspective of somebody who's done this hike and had several aches and pains, like everybody who does it, where you wonder if your hike is over. So hearing that from somebody who understands the weight of it, I think is also a little more empathetic than somebody who like is just at their regular 9-to-5 job and you're kind of the anomaly patient for the day, and they're like, well, quit doing that, it hurts.
Yeah, I think that's so valuable, and I think so important. I think in healthcare and injury management across the board, is someone that knows your goal and is kind of invested in your experience is a very different care provider than someone who, you said, if you're kind of this offhand person. My oldest daughter is a ballet dancer, and she got it in her mind that as she progresses, you know, she has her dream of what that's going to look like for her, but she has had an injury already that she spent a lot of time in PT with. And before we found the right care provider, she was saying, oh, I think maybe when I grow up, I want to be a physical therapist for ballet dancers, because one of her teachers actually had to stop dancing professionally because she had an injury rehabilitated to the point that she can function normally, but she can't dance, because they didn't understand that they needed to keep a certain amount of elasticity as this was rehabilitated in order for them to continue to be able to do the skills they needed to do. And she's like, if they'd have just known, they could have rehabilitated it differently. And so then she's like, that's what I want to be when I grow up. But as you were speaking, you know, it's such a different, if you're asking someone a question and they don't really fully understand that greater outcome, they can't really help to answer the question in the right context. And so you can understand, like, what does tendonitis on the trail mean? Does that mean I have to take 2 days off and then I have to hike slow for a week and then I can build back? Or does that mean, you know, XYZ, whereas someone else might just mean like, well, that just means you stop. It's a very different question and a very different conversation.
Definitely. And I think something potentially exciting that's happening in healthcare, especially in like the world of like PTs, is the internet is bringing wider information. So like people are able to get connected to better resources and to question when they're getting bad advice, like to have a concrete reason to see like, well, you're telling me I can't ever ride my bike again, but here's this person that specializes in people who ride their bikes, and the people who are overcoming injuries seem worse than what I'm dealing with. So that, like, that seems to be a disconnect. And so my hopefully not overly optimistic hope is A, the power in the patient. So like knowing your resources and like advocating for yourself will become better and better, but also the little bit of pressure that puts on providers to like stay up to date and to admit when they might not know, but they acknowledge that somebody else probably does know, and being more transparent with that, because we're all just people and we're all like specialized in what we're specialized in. And so I think better providers are ones that could see like a hiker and be like, look, this is what I think you have. This is a context that's like out of my depth here. There is probably somebody that could better serve you, even if you don't know who that person is, to be able to reach your goals, rather than just telling them, like using your limited knowledge to then limit them for potentially life. Because when I worked in Gen Pop, that was something that frustrated me a lot, is a lot of times people would like be in their like later 60s. And this is where this was like a bigger problem, is like people in their 60s who got an injury when they were like in their 20s or 30s. And then some, I would assume, still well-intentioned, but either ill-informed or just maybe a sign of the times provider told them to stop. Because we had a lot of fear of movement with injuries like even as much as like 30 years ago, told them to stop doing whatever that thing is they love. And so if they had always exercised and been runners or bikers or hikers or whatever it is, somebody told them to stop. Nobody ever told them to start again. And they just stopped. And then they've lost something they were passionate about, which is huge. And then they've also lost their major form of physical activity, which can then send you into more of like the chronic disease path, as opposed to like injuries and pain are like a super normal part of life. So managing them and continuing to move is definitely the better option than stopping and now heading like head first down chronic disease trajectories, and then having a way harder time clawing back out of that, as opposed to just occasionally managing some like knee pain or ankle pain or something like that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the line that injuries and pain are a normal part of life, that feels so powerful to hear, because I think in the context of, you know, outdoor activities, but also just in business, and, you know, we try to avoid those things. Like we avoid fear, we avoid pain, we avoid all these things. And so normally what we try to do is get rid of it as quickly as possible, not process it, not figure out where it's coming from, which then leads to all these things later. And to just embrace that, yes, we're not going to get through this journey without injury or without pain, but how do we tackle that when that happens? How do we just acknowledge that it's normal and then move forward without just kind of trying to make it invisible within our existence? So I think that's, I feel like we could probably take that in a lot of different directions, but I love that. And then as you were talking about kind of care and end goal, where, you know, if you are a medical provider, your end goal is obviously like a healthy human, right? And so no matter how that happens, is the right way for it to happen. And I think we get competitive in business. I'm sure in medical practice, it's competitive. And so at some point you maybe forget that that's the end goal. And I think now maybe we're seeing, like you said, more collaboration or more, it's okay if I'm not your person. And we talk a lot about this in travel. Like there's, I don't even know, let's say, you know, you're in a group with 50 people who run trips to Peru, but not one of us runs the same trip. And it's okay that if you come to me, Morgan, and I'm like, that is, you know, my trip's not for you, but this is the experience you really desire. I want you to have it, because my end goal is that travel is a powerful and transformative experience for you. So I want to find the person that allows you to have that experience. And I think it's such a different environment for business and for work to have that mindset where the end goal doesn't mean you got them there, but it means somebody got them there. And it's such a different way of thinking, but this will be my optimism hope here, is that that's, that that's reality, that we can start to think that way and to really, to treasure that outcome more than the delivery, and that the delivery is ours.
Yeah. And I think that is kind of in line with the scarcity mindset, and like that if you approach everything as if there's a scarcity, you're going to make more like tight decisions. Like, no, I'm going to help you. Like, it's got to be me, because I don't want to let you go. Versus if you have more of them like an abundance mentality, you like helping somebody who came to you, but you connect them to something better, or you were like a quick stepping stone so they got on the right path, the way they're going to feel about you in that instance is so much more favorable, in that they may still tell some of their friends to, hey, check them out, it wasn't what I needed, but like they still got me connected with this person who's been like exactly what I needed. Mm-hmm. Versus if you like held them too tight and ultimately they still didn't get what they needed, they're not going to recommend anybody come your way in business or in healthcare. Yeah. So it's like, if we just are like a little bit looser and let people come and go as they're meant to, it's just way less friction.
Yeah. Well, I had so many other things on my list that I wanted to tap into with you, but we're already at the end of our time. So I'm sad that that is happening, because I think this was such a great conversation and we brought together so many things. But before we end, I want to jump to our rapid fire or rapid fire-ish questions. to wrap up our call. So the first one of those is, what are you reading right now?
Currently, I am studying for the OCS test. So I am reading Current Concepts in Physical Therapy.
Great. Well, we're all going to run out to get a copy, I'm sure. But relatable.
Yeah. I do have the Green Mile like high on my list because I just rafted the Colorado River and the Grand Canyon. So I would like to read the Green Mile, but I can't vouch for it yet because I'm still deep in Current Concepts.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, this will be a good one for you because we know that we've talked about the intentionality of what you're carrying, but what is always in your suitcase or backpack when you travel?
I would say my emotional support water bottle.
That feels like a whole nother story that I'm sad to be leaving behind. And I was looking on your website and I saw some stickers that you sell, and there was a backpack that had this water bottle hanging off, and that's the only thing that I noticed. So now maybe we're going to have a like a secret part of this conversation that people can come back and hear about later. Let's see. To sojourn is to travel somewhere as if you live there for a short while. Where is one place that you would still love to sojourn
that I haven't already gone?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so many international places, but lately New Zealand has been like deeply calling my name. So I think part of me is hesitant to go there in the thought that I may never come back. So that one's probably top of my list.
Yeah, that feels relatable, especially for incredible hiking and outdoor activities and culture. And yeah, I can see the allure. What is something you eat that immediately connects you to a place that you've been?
I would say I have a pretty deep association with ramen and mountaintops. so just like cheap chicken flavored ramen and just beautiful expansive views.
Yeah, I was waiting for it to be some really random trail food. So I'm glad you didn't let me down. Who was a person that encouraged you to set out and explore?
I would say my parents. They are very much like say yes to things and like figure it out later kind of people, and they exposed me to a lot when I was growing up that I think set me up for a lot of the confidence I feel with travel now.
Yeah. If you could take an adventure with one person, fictional or real, alive or past, who would it be?
I think my grandma. She didn't get to get out too much. She was like in the generation where it was crazy that she even like was the breadwinner and working so much and a nurse and things like that. And I think if she had just been one generation later, she would have really had some ambitions for travel and done some cool stuff. And I'd like to take her on that kind of trip.
Yeah, I think grandmas hold a really special space in so many of my guests' heart, in mine as well. So I'm glad that you mentioned her. Who is one woman in the travel industry or the outdoor space that you would admire and would love to recognize here in this space?
Oh, there's so many. I think if we're keeping kind of a hiking theme, one that is, well, two. Can I name two that are like, sure, same thing, different font? Okay. There's Liz Thomas, who is a hiker and owns her own business, and she has Tree Line Review. And every encounter I've had with her has just been absolutely wonderful and lovely and inclusive. Oh man, that makes me want to name three. But and then Anish is her trail name, Heather Anderson. She set a lot of like records. She's an author. She's written. Like if anybody's into the book Wild, anything by Heather Anderson is worth reading. She talks a lot about the mental side of things with like the trip she's been on in the where she's hiking like 50 to 60 miles a day and setting like speed records and things like that. And so, and also like a genuinely lovely human who has her own business. So two pretty prominent women.
Yeah, thank you so much for mentioning them. And you said trail names, and I also wanted to talk about trail names. So we have so many things that we're leaving on the table here. My daughter, she was so mad, but we were traveling together for 4 months earlier this year. And I was like, oh, your trail name is Dongle. And she was like, I hate you so much. But her backpack had like always all these things like coming off of it. And we were traveling, you know, by train and stuff like that, and she would get on and like this stuff is just like smacking people as she goes by, and I was like, oh, it's the only name that you have, like it's yours, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's funny. Dongle's a good trail name.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll put that on the follow-up conversation, I guess. But thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. I've loved hearing more about your journey, and I hope it really inspires other people to just pursue their passions without kind of worrying about what the end looks like at the beginning, and know that the journey is really worth the experience.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was, as expected, lovely to have a female podcast host. So I so appreciate getting to speak to this audience and speak with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Soul of Travel, presented by Journey Woman. I hope you enjoyed the journey. If you loved this conversation, I encourage you to subscribe and rate the podcast. Please share episodes that inspire you with others, because this is how we extend the impact of this show. Learn more about each of my guests by reading our episode blogs, which are more than your average show notes. I think you'll love the connection. Find our episode blogs at www.soulofTravelPodcast.com. I am so proud of the way these conversations are bringing together people from around the world. If this sounds like your community, welcome. I am so happy you are here. I am all about community and would love to connect. You can find me on Facebook at Soul of Travel Podcast, or follow me on Instagram either at she.sojourns or at Soul of Travel Podcast. Stay up to date by joining the Soul of Travel Podcast mailing list. You'll also want to explore the Journey Woman community and its resources for women travelers over 50. I'd also like to share a quick thank you to my podcast producer and content magician, Carly Eduardo, CEO of Convergente. I look forward to getting to know you and hopefully hear your story.